Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Taylor Velazquez. Firearms are the leading cause of death for young people across the country. Compared to other high-income countries, kids in the U.S. ages 5 to 14 are 21 more times likely to be killed with guns, and young adults 15 to 24 are 23 more times likely to be killed. This danger hit close to home at the University of New Mexico last week as a gunshot detection device pointed to the Gila dorm. It's reported that four teens met up at the dorm to play video games. One of them, now identified by police as the shooter, took the life of a 14-year-old and shot another teen who was later hospitalized with non-threatening injuries. The campus was placed on lockdown for the majority of last Friday before an arrest later that afternoon. The suspected shooter made his first court appearance in Bernalillo County Metropolitan Court, facing one count of first-degree murder, aggravated battery, aggravated assault, and tampering with evidence. He will remain in custody without bond. While the investigation is still underway, there are questions concerning drugs and alcohol present in the dorms, slow response from the university police, and campus safety protocols. This morning, we'll discuss the impacts on the university's community and young people who are facing the increasing threat of gun violence. Do you attend UNM or live in the community? Do you feel safe? If not, what safety protocols do you think should be implemented? Email letstalk@kunm.org or call us live at 505-277-5866. And I would like to introduce my first guest this hour, Rodney Bow. He's the coordinator of the Campus Watch Program and Lieutenant Guevara with the University of New Mexico Police Department. Good morning, Rodney and Lieutenant. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning, Taylor. Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Of course. And Rodney, I'll go to you first. Considering last week's events, how are you thinking about campus safety now?
First of all, I'd like to give a moment of silence for those affected by the tragedy, if we could do so, and giving honor to the family as well. Having us on. I am a campus watch coordinator, which facilitates discussion and making the campus a safer place. And I really feel that we do have a very safe campus environment. I've been on campus for over 30 plus years to work intimately with the police officers there and the staff. And you know, I had a viewpoint of the police force there, and not saying that it was a bad viewpoint before I started working there, but I really get to see the compassion and the how the police officers really hold the campus and its safety in high regard. And there are a number of programs that are on campus to ensure safety on campus.
And the Campus Watch program is relatively new, launching in 2023. What role does that program play, and how closely are you all coordinating with UNMPD?
So the Campus Watch is a program that facilitates dialogue with the campus and community, really making sure that we talk about the successes and the challenges on campus. One of the things that really impacts the conversation is we have zones where the campus is broken down. There are a number of different buildings on campus, and there are zone captains where we have dialogue in addressing concerns in those specific zones. There are a number of systems that are in place. First of all, it's coming directly out of campus police department, and there are a number of systems that are utilized via the Campus Watch program. First of all, I'd like to say the officers on campus, they patrol the campus via bikes, vehicles, golf carts, segways, cameras, and they also walk the campus. They're housed, Campus Police is housed right across from the hospital, which is 2500 Campus Boulevard. And one of the key pieces for people to know about the campus is if there is a challenge or concern when they come on campus, I know some people will ask, do they call 911 or do they call 505-277-2241? And both of those answers are correct. What I would like to say though, if you want to save time and you're on campus, or in the surrounding community, you want to call Campus Police. Again, our Campus Police are real officers. They're commissioned by the County of Bernalillo along with the Sheriff's Department. And again, they'll want to call that 277-224 number to save time. If they call 911, which a lot of people think that's the way that they would go, it will take a little bit more time. That number will go to the communication center for the city of Albuquerque, but then be rerouted back to our campus.
I think that's something that a lot of people are thinking about, considering, you know, what's happened last week. And I know that's still an ongoing investigation. You can't speak directly to that. But there was also another deadly shooting on campus in 2022. So is this program coming out from that, so people like know what you just said in terms of procedure, how to get help immediately in the right fashion, so, you know, emergency services are dispatched to the scene as soon as possible to give that help?
This program was initiated by UNMPD and the campus community to make sure that everyone knows about vehicles to address campus safety and have dialogue. One of the things that we like to really say, if you see something, say something. Really important for all of us to participate, from students, faculty, staff, and as well as parents coming on campus. And there, again, are a number of opportunities for people to be connected to campus safety. Another piece I'd like to talk about is there are blue phones on the campus. And I know a lot of people don't understand what blue phones are. These are poles that are in strategic places around the campus where they can be directly connected to dispatch on the campus. And these are GPS located blue phones, again, strategically placed around the campus. And there's over 157 of those that are located on main campus, north campus, and south campus. That's one of the components of safety.
Right. And Lieutenant Guevara, I'll come to you next. What resources does UNM have when it comes to maybe partnering up with local law enforcement? I mean, the campus is so huge. There's so many entry and exit points. So what does that look like for you all?
Being that we're an open campus and, you know, everyone is welcome to our university and the campus itself, it is quite a daunting task to, you know, keep all those locations safe. We have hundreds and hundreds of buildings on campus, parking lots, parking structures. We handle UNM Hospital and all those facilities and businesses as well that are around the university area. We do work very closely with the Albuquerque Police Department, the university substation. Ray Del Greco, who runs that substation, we do joint operations with them periodically along the central corridor from in the university area and Nob Hill, where we try to make an impact on crime-affected areas with a specific focus on specific crimes to address those issues. We work closely with ACS in addressing homeless needs and issues and concerns. Anytime we encounter the shelter challenged on campus, we don't consider it a problem. We consider it a resource outreach. We offer them resources, water, food, assistance of any kind, before we start addressing if it could be a problem.
And
We work closely with Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department as well. Major Pat Burke, recently promoted at BCSO, was an employee here as a lieutenant, and he has offered and extended us a lot of resources and help with that as well.
And I know you just mentioned a lot of the outside components that go into keeping the campus safe, but I want to pivot more towards student life and student housing. So I think we're all interested, who is directly responsible for, you know, keeping tabs on who's going in and out of the dorms and checking for things like drugs on campus or weapons?
Thank you for the question. So it is illegal to have or have a possession of a firearm on campus. It's a misdemeanor crime. When it comes to the individual, we have briefings with them, or at least meetings informing them of what is legal and what is not legal. Rodney has a presentation that he does for parents and students to inform them about what is allowed and what isn't. Housing themselves, they have also have briefings with the incoming students, advising them of, you know, the rules, policies, and procedures of the university. Now, when it comes to an individual who decides they're going to take a weapon and bring it onto campus, it really is an integrity issue for that individual, whether it is for personal safety because they don't feel safe, or if it's for nefarious reasons. It is an integrity issue, and those individuals have to be held accountable. When we encounter those types of calls, we address them. There has been in the past incidents where we have had to handle those type of calls, and we handle them case by case. We take it very seriously. Students, faculty, and staff safety is our number one priority on the department. We work closely with housing as well. We have training every fall before school kicks in, where we do scenario-based training with them and one-on-one conversations about how we operate, so that they understand. And we do work closely with housing all the way down to the resident assistants.
And now that you mentioned the residential assistants, would you say they're probably the most point of contact for students? I mean, they're interacting with these students every day. They're hearing things from other kids in the building. So if they were to discover illegal substances or drugs, what would that process be like in terms of reporting? And are they sufficiently trained to handle that immediate threat?
That's a great question. Yes, they are trained extensively. They are the eyes and ears. They know what's going on those floors. They know their residents well. They have good communication from the student up to their management and to the police department. That management, we have regular meetings, conversations about issues. We work closely with the Dean of Students Office. And anytime we have policy violations, we work closely with Dean of Students to address that. We understand that every student that attends this university has a right to an education. And we try to make that work out as best as we possibly can to ensure that that student is not just safe, but that they get the best education they possibly can while they're attending this university.
And is there any point in time where maybe you have a report or there's a rumor going around campus that there's something in a dorm room of a student? Is there at any point a proponent of UNM police coming in and conducting searches?
Yes. So every individual has a right to privacy. For example, let's say an RA has to go in and do an inspection for a plumbing issue or anything like that, and they happen to walk into a dorm room. Now, there's a common area. So we have different dorm rooms who have different types of setups, and some of them have common areas that are shared by all the residents that are assigned to that room. If an RA walks into a dorm room and there's a common area where there could, let's say, be a substance, whether it's alcohol or drugs, or if it's a weapon, police are called immediately and we go in to contact the RA, get the information of what is what's going on. Now, based on the fact that we cannot go in and seize an object, we request that the object is provided to us so that we're not seizing an object illegally. We hang on to that object or that item, and we hold it in safekeeping and wait for somebody, because if it's in a common area, we can't prove who it belongs to. Now, if it's in a private dorm room, now that's a totally different circumstance. This is where police or law enforcement work closely with other offices such as Dean of Students and Housing. And that's where we initiate an investigation, both internally and if it involves a law that was broken, criminally. So there's kind of two parallels where we cross over and work collectively to address that issue. And they are pretty common, but not as frequently as you would think. The students here are really good. It's those that like to come visit our campus and those people that are here that tend to not understand the rules, and they'll break those laws or rules, not knowing that is against the policy.
Right. Well, I'm going to pause the conversation right there. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Taylor Velazquez. We'll be back talking about campus safety and how that's structured at UNM. We'll be right back.
Have an old car you're not using? Why not turn it into something powerful, like support for KUNM? We accept all kinds of vehicles, cars, trucks, RVs, you name it. Donating is quick and easy, towing is free, and you'll receive a KUNM membership. Best of all, you'll be powering the station you count on, keeping the music, news, and voices you love on the air. Donate today at KUNM.org or call 1-888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. KUNM, powered by you.
Hi, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of Latino USA. We all love great stories, and great stories are what we pride ourselves in delivering to you every week. Latino USA presents a mix of reporting on culture and politics, diverse voices, and coverage of current and emerging issues, featuring stories from the heart, stories that will make you think and maybe even inspire you. Listen to Latino USA
Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Taylor Velazquez. Next week, we'll be discussing energy and the environment. And today, we're going to be talking about campus safety and gun violence following the fatal shooting that happened last week at the University of New Mexico. Have you lived in the dorms? What was the presence of drugs and alcohol, if any? And what was the reporting process like for you? Give us a call at 505-277-5866. This morning, we've already spoken with Rodney Bowe and Lieutenant Guevara with UNMPD, and we do have Bowe Wilson with Students Demand Action, and we'll hear from New Mexicans to prevent gun violence in the next coming minutes here. But I want to go back to Lieutenant Guevara here for a second. You know, we're looking at active shooters, mass shootings as something that's normalized and common. I'm sure we'll get into that soon here, but there was a shooting that happened at Michigan State University in 2023 where three students were killed. And since then, they've upgraded things like classroom doors, making sure those have locks, increased camera coverage. They've even used AI software that's capable of IDing certain people in crowds. Does UNM have this kind of technology or infrastructure?
I think Rodney can really answer that one real well, because this is part of his specialty. Rodney, you want to address the cameras and how many we have on campus?
Sure. We do have an extensive camera system on campus, over 1,500 cameras. And a number of those have multiple lenses. Those are connected directly to dispatch. So that's one of the systems. Another piece that we urge anybody that comes to campus for an extended period of time to partake with is the Rave Lobo Guardian app. There's an app that you can put on your phone, and it acts just like those blue phones. You have direct access to dispatch, and it is also GPS located. There's also a timer that you can, if you're going from, say, a parking structure, and you're going to Zimmerman Library, and you are not feeling safe, and you want somebody to know your journey and when you get there, you can utilize that with a timer. And if that person doesn't hear from you, they actually can contact dispatch as well. There's a direct text and photo messaging piece also with that Lobo Guardian app. And again, it is a direct access to dispatch. So it acts just like that blue emergency phone. You know, there's also escorts on campus that are directly linked to UNMPD that will escort students to and from the various places on campus. That service is actually from 6:30 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. And if a student, again, is traversing the campus and they want to have an escort, they can call that 505-277-2241 number to get provided an escort. So if they are wanting to do something after 10 o'clock, they're going from a parking structure to residence hall or something of that nature, they can actually call UNMPD, and that goes for not only the campus, but close surrounding areas, and they can get an escort from UNMPD as well.
And I do want to underscore that we did reach out to American Campus Communities, who operates two of the UNM's housing options, which would be Lobo Village and Casas del Rio, where the shooting actually occurred. We didn't receive a response, but I do have one more question when it concerns safety measures in the dorms overnight. So is there someone sitting at the front desk of a dorm? Is there a security guard that walks around housing complexes? What does that look like?
So there is security that is there in the dorms 24/7. There's a resource desk as well that is 24/7. The dorms are locked 24/7 as well, and you need to use your Lobo ID for students to get in. We tell students to make sure that you don't put a rock or something in the, you're having a friend to come by, not to leave a rock or something in the door. That endangers not only themselves, but the whole dorm facility. Those security escorts, guards, they actually go and check the buildings, the entrances. They check around the building to the circumference of the buildings. They check inside the buildings. They open and lock doors when it's needed. So there is an active presence there 24/7.
And KUNM's Mia Casa went out this week and got reactions from the community regarding the shootings and how people were feeling about their safety. She interviewed Jimmy, who graduated from the UNM last spring and now works for the community and for the university. Here's some of that conversation.
Did you get Lobo alerts that said that the campus was on lockdown?
I did, I believe. The formatting of them is a little bit weird, so it just says, like, campus closed, like, all caps, and it doesn't really specify exactly what the issues are, but I do think that they closed campus pretty early, and I did get an alert for that.
How do you feel about the vagueness of the messages?
I mean, because it's so close, everyone here is really, like, affected by it. I really do wish they were more specific and which specific areas were affected. They didn't really mention that until much later in the day. So, yeah, I definitely did not like the vagueness, especially just because of this area. There's a lot that goes on, and so sometimes you look at them and you're like, oh, whatever. So I wish they kind of stressed the importance of this a little bit more.
So how do you feel about your safety and other people's safety on campus now that this really horrible incident happened?
I mean, it is really worrying, and it's also really worrying, like I said, that people don't always understand how serious it is, especially with the way that they send these messages out. Like, even with this incident, I was driving around and I saw people walking around campus. And if I had just seen that and wasn't paying attention to this and I wasn't working on campus, maybe I wouldn't have known that I should stay inside and it was actually on lockdown.
Well, thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And Lieutenant Guevara, after hearing what that student and now employee of UNM has said, what is the process once you get the information that people need to stay indoors, not come to campus? What is that process like, and how can the community opt into those Lobo alerts?
So in crisis management, we have specific groups Byron Piot and his team are basically handle the crisis management on campus. They have a specific office and they run the RAVE system, which is the text message system. It's the backbone to our safety system. The crisis management and preparedness team is the team that handles the information that's going out when there's an incident such as what we had last week. The information that has to get out is critical. It is general. And the part of the problem, I noticed that the person you interviewed stated that he saw people walking around campus. All visitors who come to campus don't necessarily have the RAVE app. So they're not getting information. We are looking at that situation to maybe improve our systems with messaging boards around campus that could flash a message about, you know, campus is closed, please evacuate the area. Audible warning systems at the blue phones. And now they're constantly blue, but maybe when an incident like this happens where it can start flashing red and send an audible message out that campus is closed or shelter in place. So we're looking at things like this to change so that those who don't have the information on the app, on the application, on the phone application, and they're not informed, that they can get that information while they're on campus visiting. We have constantly have people visiting here. To answer your question earlier about the shooting that was earlier in 2022 on campus, and if that incident did change a lot of things, well, obviously there's a reaction to something like this, and it did. The top management here at UNM is also very focused and concerned with everybody's safety on campus. They have put a lot of money and effort hiring new employees and addressing crime issues. We understand that we have to evolve and grow and improve our systems so that everybody can have a positive experience while they're here. So we are constantly looking at items, reevaluating, and such as Rodney coming on board with our department. That is another growth in that direction. We've also added a crime analyst this last year so that we can have more data that we can share and be transparent with the community, public, and those that work here in these operations, so that, you know, we have a better understanding of crime on campus.
Right. And reporter Mia Costas also spoke with Tiana, who will be returning to UNM in just a few short weeks here for their nursing program. Here's what she had to say about how common violence feels to her.
I would say I generally do feel pretty safe, but I do think I'm pretty desensitized to anything like those alerts. It just feels unfortunate and it feels kind of dystopian, but it's not surprising. It's also, I think, growing up here specifically. So my roommate, she's from North Carolina, and when we were in undergrad a few years ago, we went to a UNM party. I don't remember exactly whose party it was, but it ended up getting shot. Someone came in and it was super chaotic. Like, everyone was scattered and ran around. We had our friend who was driving around looking for everyone in our group to pick them up. Mm-hmm. And after they picked us up, we were all kind of like laughing about it. Like, oh my gosh, that was crazy. Like, obviously glad everyone's okay, but we're kind of just like laughing it off, which I think for us is our coping mechanism for that kind of thing. And my friend from North Carolina was super freaked out, and she was like, you guys are making me feel crazy because you're laughing about this.
And before we discuss many of Tiana's points, I'll introduce our next two guests this hour, Bo Wilson, a volunteer leader for Students Demand Action at UNM, and Miranda Viscali, co-president of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. Good morning, you two. Thanks for being part of the show.
Good morning. Thank
Good
you.
Morning.
And Bo, I'll go to you first. You just heard from Tiana how this kind of violence, considering mass shootings, active shooters, have kind of become desensitized for a lot of people. Is that something that you also feel?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've grown up in this culture of gun violence, and it has been extremely normalized for a number of reasons. You know, we're constantly feeling that we need to be prepared for these situations, and that has started since we were really young. Like, I was the same age as the victims of Sandy Hook. I was in first grade when that happened. And so it quite literally grew up with me. And, you know, there's been, you know, significantly more mass shootings the older I've gotten. And now it's followed me to campus. And, I mean, I've been in lockdown drills where, like, people are giggling and not necessarily taking it seriously. But it's not just that, but I think it also is because we're desensitized to it. I've been in situations where we thought there was going to be a shooting nearby. I was with my parents, and they were kind of, like, freaking out. They didn't know what to do, and I was kind of just sitting there like, this is a normal day for me, to be honest. Like, this type of stuff has happened at my school before, like when I was in high school. So, yeah, I can definitely relate to that.
And you'll be returning to classes here soon at UNM, and I know, like you said, we're usually seeing this kind of violence secondary high school level, but now it's kind of following people, like, as you said, we're growing up now to higher education, to their workplaces. But how are you feeling about your safety now on campus considering this last incident?
I think generally speaking, I did feel pretty safe on campus, like generally. But obviously in moments when shootings unfold on our campus, I don't feel safe. I think it's incredibly hard to begin a new semester with, like, the weight of this tragedy on our community. And instead of, you know, focusing on school and lectures and things like that, we're now thinking about, you know, a potential shooting. And I think a lot of us have before, but now that it has been on our campus right before school starts again, I think it is a lot on our mind. And it does send a message to students that, like, safety is not guaranteed, and that we have to, like, emotionally brace ourselves consistently for not just, like, the stress of college and, like, classes and tests and exams, but, you know, for the possibility of a shooting happening and the loss of life of, you know, someone getting shot and killed. That's not something that any student should have to deal with or even worry about.
And if you think a young person wanted access to a gun, do you think there's easy access nowadays?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Since guns are the number one killer of, you know, my generation and young people, I would say that, yeah, easy access is pretty normal at this point because it's becoming so normal to have shootings like that. There's a real sense of fear and I think instability that's driving a lot of young people to own firearms themselves because they feel like that's the only way that they can feel safe. And so I do think that is one reason why there is an uprising in young people owning firearms. But easy access to firearms is not the solution to that problem. It is part of the problem.
And Miranda, I'll follow also with you. You've been doing this violence prevention work for a while now. What changes have you seen over the last few years when it comes to youth and gun violence?
So I've seen good changes and I've seen bad changes. I feel that I know right now too many of our youth have firearms. And so New Mexico is a state awash in guns. Per capita, we have more guns than almost any other state. Those are the guns that we know of, right? We know from our gun buybacks, which we're actually doing one at UNM substation on August 23rd, that we can see by, you know, if somebody brings in 15 firearms, we actually have no idea how many guns are really out there. When you're a state awash in firearms, those will eventually get in unsafe hands, and they will eventually get in the hands of our youth. Right now, our youth can go on the Telegram app and buy it's one-stop shopping of drugs, counterfeit money, and drugs and firearms. Mm-hmm. They can get rid, the feds can try to rein Telegram in, which they did a few months ago. It won't matter. There'll be another Telegram. So what we have to do is work to make sure the triggers are not getting pulled, especially with our young people. What we also saw in this very tragic shooting is that there was alcohol and most likely drugs involved. We have a serious problem in the state when it comes to substance use disorders. We have very little rehab. I'm right now trying to get a young man who's addicted to meth into a rehab. They're full. They don't answer your phone calls. And we know there's a direct correlation, right, between substance use disorders and firearms, especially with our youth. So that's something that I think we really need to look at, especially in this next legislative session that's a budget session. How do we really start putting resources into people with addiction problems? In addition to that, I think we also need to, and we work a lot with young people at Young Adult Court. And what they are telling us over and over is that they kept getting caught up with drugs and firearms because they were just getting slapped, their wrists slapped. And so it kept escalating and escalating. Is juvenile detention, is that the answer? I don't necessarily think so. A lot of them, that's a rite of passage to go and get out. What I think we need to do is take that model that we see with young adult court, where it goes 18 to 23, and do the same thing with ages 12 to 18 so that they have to do urine analysis, they have to go to court, they have to get counseling, so that we really do wrap around services and they're held accountable for what they did very early on. Because otherwise it's just going to escalate, and then it's finally going to escalate to the trigger getting pulled.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We're discussing how to keep campuses safe from gun violence and the impact on young people. We'll be back in a minute.
Every day, all around the world, this centuries-old art form is thriving. Classical music is made new with fresh interpretations of the great works and with groundbreaking premieres. There's a literal world of creativity to be discovered and shared. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the best from concert halls around the globe on APM's Performance Today.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Have an old car you're not using? Why not turn it into something powerful, like support for KUNM? We accept all kinds of vehicles, cars, trucks, RVs, you name it. Donating is quick and easy, towing is free, and you'll receive a KUNM membership. Best of all, you'll be powering the station you count on, keeping the music, news, and voices you love on the air. Donate today at KUNM.org or call 1-888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. KUNM, powered by you.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're discussing gun violence on college campuses in the wake of a fatal shooting at UNM last week. On the panel this morning, we have New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence, Students Demand Action, UNMPD, and the Student Health and Counseling Services here at UNM. There's still some time to call in this morning. Were you on campus at the time of the shooting? Do you have questions about accessing mental health services? You can give us a call at 505-277-5866. And before we headed to a break, we got a listener email from John, who writes, "For many years, I walked my dog on campus more than once a day. I've seen a number of UNMPD drive around campus. Once I saw them on Segways. I've never seen them on a bike and definitely never seen them patrolling on foot." Lieutenant, what are you thinking about when we're seeing those kind of comments? How often are patrols going out on foot?
It's periodical. Now that we have the golf carts, it seems like they're utilizing that a little bit more because it's more efficient about getting around campus, responding to calls on interior of main campus. It's much more efficient. It doesn't affect the grass and the grounds and so forth. So I saw the golf cart patrols as more efficient than walking because it takes a longer response when an officer is on foot and they have to respond to a call. It's unfortunate that these things happen and maybe they don't see them. But I know on other shifts like swing shift in the evenings and graveyard, they do a lot of walking patrols, checking buildings and so forth on those shifts.
And Bo, I'll ask you this question too. Would you feel safer having a more police presence on campus, or what would make you feel safer?
We can definitely, take all the time we want to talk about like safety protocols and police on campus and housing protocols and all that. But those are all like reactionary actions and protocols. And I do think that we can prevent these tragedies from happening before they happen. We can prevent it before having to actually react to it. And so I think that kind of speaks for itself. The LOBO alerts are important and, campus watch are important. But again, safety cannot be reactive. We need to be proactive with our solutions and things like that, like gun safety measures and, legislation and things like that, and policy that actually help prevent gun violence from happening in the first place and get down to the root cause.
And Miranda, you kind of talked about this a little bit before, but our numbers are showing that anywhere between 400 and 5 million privately owned guns are in the U.S. right now, meaning that there are currently more guns than people. How do we keep these weapons from getting in the hands of young people?
That's a really good question, something I think about every day, not every minute. I think what we have to do is we really need to work with our young people about not normalizing firearm use, right? So the majority of the work we do at New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence is with young people. And the majority of those youth have either pulled the trigger or have had the trigger pulled on them, or both. And what we hear over and over from them, and we do need to start listening to those youth, because they're the ones that are on the front line of this, right? And hearing what they have to say, because it's become completely normal to them. They honestly believe that by the time they turn 18, they'll either be in a cell or be dead. And that's the reality. So how do we reach them and work with them, which is what we've been doing and have seen very good results from it, to help them understand that having a firearm is not the answer. Because what Bo said is correct, that they do feel like they need it for protection, because so many of our young people do have firearms. But we also have to get them services, right? So we also have to figure out, why are they in this situation? So the young kids who are born into it, right? They're born into the gangs, or they're born into that lifestyle. How do we give them wraparound services so that they can reroute their lives? Mm-hmm. And I mean, the tragedy that happened at UNM, Bo was 100% correct. These are all reactive measures. And sadly, this could happen again at UNM, at any campus, in any dorm of this country. And there's only so much we can do to stop it until we rein in our young people having access to these firearms. Mm-hmm. You know, I am 100% behind passing gun violence prevention legislation, right? I've worked on 6 very good bills that have passed. We are seeing a reduction. Would any of those bills have prevented this? No. And that's the sad reality of it, right? What we would like to see is passing a law in this next legislative session that makes it so that an 18-year-old can't go out and buy an AR-15. I just spent 3 weeks convincing a young person who was about to turn 18, who has no business owning a firearm, was going to go buy an AR-15. Why is that legal, right? So not that this particular firearm was an AR-15. What could have potentially prevented this is that gun was stolen. So let's get really push to have our gun owners lock up their firearms. Not just because, even if they don't have a child in the house, lock up your firearms. Whoever did steal, whoever's gun this was, obviously had called in. Another law that we need to pass is that if your gun gets stolen, it by law you have to call in and say your gun got stolen and what type of gun it was.
Hmm. And Rodney, we're hearing from both Bo and Miranda that we need to start listening to young people. They're the ones on the ground. So have you all considered maybe implementing mandatory training events at freshman orientation or any training events or campus mandatory events for students to learn de-escalation techniques or look for warning signs in other students? Are you guys, what's the thinking process there?
We actually do training with in new student orientation, not only for students, but the parents as well. And train, give them information about safety on campus. In the Campus Watch, we are planning to reach out not only to get student input, faculty and staff input, and input from the community. We want everybody, again, to participate in making the university a safer place. And it takes everyone to really understand the safety parameters that are already in place. But really educating those students and community that come into the campus about how we conduct our safety on campus.
And I want to introduce our last guest this morning, Stephanie McIver, Executive Director of Student Health and Counseling here at UNM. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
And we will have the contact information for both resources on campus. Those are Student Health and Counseling, or SHAC, and Counseling Assistance and Referral Services, or CARS, for university staff and faculty. But if you feel like you need immediate assistance, call or text 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. But Stephanie, I'll go to you now. We've heard from Bo and other folks on campus about how disturbing these events can be for them, and they aren't all that shocking anymore. But when there's an active shooter on school campuses, what are the long-term mental health impacts? It looks like Stephanie is having some Zoom technical difficulties here. So, Bo, I'll ask you, you know, like you said, you're in these drills your whole life, and now you're seeing it play out more often. What's the impact on mental health?
I mean, I did mention this a little bit before, but this constant state of, like, preparedness is absolutely exhausting, and it definitely takes a toll on our mental health. I mean, again, we're growing up, and we've grown up in an era, in a culture where, you know, active shooter drills are normal, where shootings are becoming so normal, and it really shouldn't be that way. We're expected to adapt to the violence instead of actually addressing the root causes. So, yeah, no, it's absolutely exhausting, and it's unfair to us. It's like I mentioned a while back, it's also causing us to become extremely desensitized. It's forcing us to prepare for school shootings or mass shooting events when we know what it takes to prevent these tragedies. And it's basically saying that, like, we accept this is our normal and it should not be that way.
Hmm. And when you're walking from class to class, are you hearing from your peers anything on campus? Is there that communication and that camaraderie among you all, or is it just such a huge campus that everyone's kind of doing their own thing?
I think that, like, a lot of us do, you know, we have that sense of fear that could happen, but a lot of us are also in the same boat of, like, we want to do something, and something definitely needs to change with, you know, how we address our youth and, you know, the system there, because, like, you know, I just wanted to add that, like, a lot of young people are often acting out and turning to violence because it's a reflection of a system in society that has failed them. And a lot of us have talked about that. But we've also talked about the issue of, like, access that young people have to firearms. But then there's also, like, you know, groups of people on campus that don't necessarily agree with it and don't necessarily see the need to act on this. And so there's definitely several different perspectives there, and that's definitely part of the problem. I think the divide is part of the problem as well. We need to come together, you know?
Definitely. And I think we have our Zoom guest back on the call. Stephanie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. That's great to hear. And so you're coming in contact with these young people every day. What are the mental health effects are you seeing from this kind of violence?
Well, there are two things that we're concerned about. One, especially on Friday, when I, our counseling director, our counseling associate director, deployed to support the students that were directly involved and the parents of the students who were here for NSO, we're concerned about really acute reactions to events like this. And it's normal for everyone when we're exposed to any threat of violence for us who feel capable to immediately go into action and engage in helpfulness in resolving the situation, and then may experience very shortly thereafter. We started seeing this toward the end of the day and the next day, and certainly on Monday when students contacted us back, we get what our counseling director refers to as a kind of adrenaline dump, where you finally recognize, your body physiologically recognizes the exposure to the threat and begins to have a physiological reaction, a nervous system arousal reaction to the scariness of that event. And so we get concerned about the students that are having an immediate reaction like that, that has to do with an adrenaline dump or feeling helpless in the moment to be able to do something and therefore feeling more at risk. We like to intervene in that. And one of the things that we were most concerned about, which your guests were talking about, is the students who have had repeated exposures to shooting events, to the lifetime of school drills, to a sense of inevitability that violence will occur for them. We were trying to identify the students where that occurred. So those are the acute, immediate reactions that we get very concerned about. I actually interfaced with a parent who is here to pick up their student, for whom this event triggered their own trauma. They had survived a shooting. And so for those who have had this lifetime of experience and other repeated traumas, that's who we're looking out for. And then we're looking out for the ones who are very helpful in the moment and then have this after effect that is a really aversive physiological arousal when their body catches up to the awareness that they have been exposed to threat.
And I think what we've heard so far from Bo and the other young people that our reporter had interviewed out on UNM's campus, it's just that in this state of, if it's going to happen, it's a when this is going to happen. So how can young people or people who are going to, you know, these institutions that do face this kind of violence more often than not, how do they manage this long-term anxiety from, I don't want to go to a campus or my workplace because there was just a shooting?
Well, I think of it when I work with individuals. I'm a clinical psychologist by training and practice. And so when I work with people on this, I think about what you can do on the micro level and what you can do on the macro level. So on the micro level, I think it has to do with assessing our own physical safety sphere. You know, one of the things that we have done because we live in this violent society is that as individuals, we have grown desensitized and non-responsive and have increased our threshold for what I sometimes call ridiculousness and chaos. So we may be in circles where we have begun permitting behaviors that are really inappropriate and that put us at risk. So if we're in our personal circles with individuals who abuse substances, who drink too much, who do things that we know create risk in our own environments, and as we talked about, there is a very clear correlation between substance use, alcohol use, and gun ownership that is more likely to lead to violence. So I think we need to question what we're permitting in our own personal spheres and how we're reacting to those zones of safety and creating zones of safety with safe people, with not permitting guns in our environment. We know that the mere access to guns causes us to perceive conflict circumstances as more severe than they may actually be. So, you know, we can make those personal choices in our lives to create personal safety. But then this is a moment, undoubtedly, we've been in this moment for, I think, far too long, where we all can act on a macro level, where we support policies that create more safety, we support laws that create more safety, we create culture and campus culture, we talk about that all the time, where we as individuals don't accept, permit, condone access behaviors that really make it risky for everyone. So there are things we can do on both levels.
And I'm also thinking about the people who were on campus at the time of the shooting last week. Going into college is already such a stressful time in life, but now considering that they experienced this trauma and they might be feeling scared to be on campus or move out on their own into the dorms, how should they find help?
Help is everywhere. So you all talked about the orientation leaders and the residence assistants that are their most immediate access when they live on campus. They are wonderful. They are skilled. They are resourced. They are informed. They are their first line in the residence halls to connecting to help. And then all of our student affairs division, I represent one of the departments within student affairs. All of the offices within student affairs are here to help students and provide them support as they get through college. Any door is the right door. So they can go to any of our offices and say, this has happened, I'm feeling this way, I need this thing, I require this kind of support, and we'll all know what to do and what resources are available. As you mentioned, students can call 24/7 to Shack, even after hours when we're closed, and listen to our phone tree, and there's connection to 24/7 support. So all registered UNM students also have access to this 24/7, 365 telehealth line that can provide some crisis support and then reconnect you to us during our open hours. So help is everywhere. Even faculty get informed about all the services that are available to them. So any door is the right door. All students need to do is ask.
And we only have a few minutes left, but I think I want to talk to those students who may feel like, oh, no big deal, we'll laugh it off, like we heard from about earlier. But what symptoms should they look out for if they're experiencing anxiety and trying to write it off?
Yeah, the most immediate things, disruption in appetite or sleeping. And then over the longer course of time, we're looking at really intrusive thoughts. We're looking at hypervigilance, where you get a high startle response to everything and a fearfulness about being in public or being around others. And then longer term, we look for a real exacerbation in mood. So if we don't address those symptoms early on, we start developing some really detrimental...
And I'm going to have to pause you right there, Stephanie. There's our theme music. That's all the time we have, unfortunately. Thanks to everyone who emailed and shared your thoughts. And thank you so much to our guests, Rodney Bowe, Lieutenant Guevara, Bo Wilson, Miranda Viscali, and Stephanie McIver. This show was made possible by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and KUNM listeners like you. Let's keep the conversation going. Search KUNM Radio to comment on Facebook and look for KUNM News on Instagram and TikTok or email letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it on our website or subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Our engineer this morning was Marino Spencer. Mia Casas screened your calls and Coffee Movahead produced the show. Next week, we'll do a show on tourist destinations and how they deal with natural disasters. I'm Taylor Velazquez, and this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.